Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Paula Nunes.
And good morning, everyone. I'm Taz Powers. And good morning, Paula, all the way to Granite Bay. Our guest, Junis Orloff, MD, is a best-selling author who will be talking about new solutions for dealing with emotions in our hyper-tense world. She will explain how to take a remarkable journey, one that leads to happiness, serenity, and a mastery over negativity that infuses our daily life. She says we possess the ability to liberate ourselves from worry, anger, and fear. We all are definitely ready for that one.
We sure are, especially in today's atmosphere. It just seems like everyone has something happening this lately. Well, Dr. Orloff is an author, and her newest book is Second Sight, a riveting story of her exile between two worlds, the intuitive realm and the mainstream medicine. Second Sight reveals her journey from an intuitive child alone with abilities that she just didn't understand, to an esteemed intuitive psychiatrist who dares to defy medical taboos. And now she teaches people how to recognize intuitive experiences in everyday life and awaken their own intuition with a special empowering exercises. Dr. Orloff, welcome. I think she's here. Hello. Oh. It shows that somebody's there. Huh.
Okay.
Okay, let me put some music on and see what's happening here.
Okay.
Oh, she came in again. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello, Dr. Orloff?
Yes.
Oh, welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you.
We just introduced you. I don't know.
Oh,
if you
yes, I heard it.
Well, you know, you come from such an incredible background, a family of 25 physicians that promotes democracy of healing, wherein every aspect of oneself is granted a vote in the search for total health. What a supportive environment you must have grown up in. How was that?
Well, in Second Sight, I write about my journey. It actually wasn't such a supportive environment. I was a little girl who had intuitions, and I would have premonitions about things. And I would predict things like deaths, illnesses, and earthquakes. And I had two physician parents who it scared them to death. And so they forbade me to ever mention my intuitions at home again. And this is a story that I write about in Second Sight. That's because as a child, I had these intuitions, and they were squashed. And my healing path and what Second Sight is about is how to integrate the gift of intuition and use it in your daily life, and how I use it as a psychiatrist and an intuitive in my practice now.
Wow.
Well, do your parents recognize your intuition now?
Well, both of my parents have passed on. And in Second Sight, I write about my mother's death and the intuitions that I had about her deathbed. And around the deathbed, my mother, what she said is she handed over the family secrets in that I came from a whole lineage of intuitive healers on my mother's side of the family, which was quite an eye-opener for me because my parents never supported my intuition. And so it was like a circle was completed for me that I was given that information. And when I was writing that chapter of Second Sight called Female Lineage, I connected with some of the other women in my family who helped me write the chapter who were also intuitive. So it was quite an awakening for me for my mother to have shared that.
Why do you think she didn't step up and kind of let you know this in advance?
Well, my mother was a Beverly Hills physician. She was very conservative and mainstream in a lot of ways, and she was so afraid that people would think I was strange or weird. And particularly, you know, my being a physician, she felt that by telling other physicians it might jeopardize my career or, you know, bring about criticism or whatever. So she was, you know, really fear-based. And however, luckily on her deathbed, she did choose to share with me, you know, that potent piece of information.
Now, the other women members of your family, had you connected with them before, or did you know about them?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that I didn't even know they existed until the deathbed, until
were
my mother's deathbed. I didn't even know that they had intuitions, because I grew up in Los Angeles, and they were on the East Coast. So I didn't have a chance to really get to know them. So the great revelation for me that it's in Second Sight is that I came from this whole lineage of women, and that was very important for me to know.
And that must have been really exciting.
Yes, I mean, it was. It was exciting, and you know, like pieces of the puzzle were put together for me.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be a strange question, but just by your picture, are you Irish? Do you have any?
No, not at all. But I am about to go to Ireland because I'm teaching a workshop on Second Sight in Ireland.
Oh, because the people, because I come from a lineage of Irish, and there's a lot of intuition in my background. So,
yes, well, Second Sight is a term that's used in the Irish countryside for visionaries and people who can see. And that's why I named the book Second Sight, was because of that term that's used in the Irish countryside to connote what is mystical.
I just got a chill on that one.
Why did it take so long to write the book?
Well, I had a lot of fear about what the medical profession would think, because I was brought up in a very traditional medical setting, in that I did my medical school at USC, LA County, and I did my psychiatric residency at Wadsworth VA, and also at UCLA. So I was brought up in a very traditional medical, you know, training program, which did not embrace intuition, and in fact equated intuition or anything psychic with psychotic. And so I was afraid to bring it up, basically, and so it took me a long time to write the book. But I, you know, part of the healing process for me has been working through my fears and gaining a lot of confidence in the message of the power of intuition. And so publishing Second Sight really was a great gift for me, because it was, you know, a chance for me to really, really express my intuitive voice without fear.
Well, it's so empowering, not only for you, but also the people that you're working with. You know, you got a second sight to be able to outguess aspects that show up, you know?
Well, yes, as a psychiatrist, intuition is just invaluable to me, because the way I work is that I use all my traditional medical knowledge that I learned at UCLA and USC, but I also combine intuition, which is listening to gut feelings or flashes of insight or dreams or senses of energy, and I incorporate all that in the way I treat patients. And in Second Sight, I teach people how they could incorporate all that in their own lives, too.
Well, do you see this opening up a little bit in the Western conservative? Because the reason why I'm asking if you think it's opening is because I know a lot of family counselors that work with their intuition. So to me, it seems to be, the door seems to be opening a little bit more.
Oh, very much so. I think the door to intuitive medicine is opening, and it is the new wave of healthcare. I really believe that. And in fact, you know, I had the opportunity to train some medical students and psychiatric residents to listen to intuition early on in their training program so they can use it, you know, with their skills in patient care.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, I know. That's really the place to start.
Yeah.
So the place to start actually is childhood.
Yeah, I was going to say, in
children.
Yeah, you as a child, though, I mean, it's kind of like you had these feelings, and then how young were you that you could actually be aware of this taking place in you, and yet maybe also aware that you couldn't say anything?
Well, I had these premonitions and intuitions at a very, very young age. I would sense things, but it really came to a height when I was about 10 or 11, when they were getting very, very strong. And that's when my mother forbade me to mention any of my intuitions at home. So I wasn't allowed to talk about it. But it was around 10 or 11, right before puberty.
So did she acknowledge that this was really something, or did she just say be quiet because of, you know, problems, other people knowing?
No, she just looked at me with these big exasperated eyes and said, why do you keep saying these negative things about my friends that come true? It was a horrible feeling as a child to see that look in my mother's eyes, you know, but it was, you know, that's how she perceived it, you see. So, and I didn't realize that as a child, you know, being able to predict scary things, not necessarily happy things, they're just a louder signal on an intuitive level.
Right.
So it was just easier to pick up. But I misinterpreted it and thought maybe I was causing these, maybe there was something wrong with me. I didn't know. But the reason I write about my journey in Second Sight is because I know a lot of people have gone through similar journeys where they've had these intuitive experiences early on that have not been understood, that have not been encouraged to come out, that have not been explained. So a lot of people grow up scared of intuition or else not even remembering they have it.
Yeah, I think when the child is stifled, then they put it up on a shelf and forget they have it.
Yeah, and then they grow up, you know, become adults and don't even know until they want to reawaken it. And it's possible for everyone to develop intuition and reawaken it.
Now, I was listening to one of your videos, and you said even as a child, sometimes it was hard for you to go into like a shopping center or a hospital because you could pick up all this energy, and it may not all be good.
Right. Well, part of being a sensitive is that you do pick up energy. And as a child, I couldn't go into shopping malls or crowded places because I would, you know, pick up all the stress there and walk out either exhausted or with some ache or pain I didn't have before or anxious or depressed. And I didn't know what was happening. And I went to my mother and she said, oh, honey, you just don't have a thick enough skin. You know, which is not something that you say to intuitive children because it's not a matter of getting a thicker skin. It's a matter of learning how to cope with the intuitions and use it in a positive way.
Now, do you teach in your book or do you give exercises to help people that are that way, that go into shopping centers and have problems dealing with the energy?
Yes. In Second Sight, I talk about it, and also in Emotional Freedom, I talk about it at great length.
So there are exercises that can help you with it.
You must practice them. Anyone who's a sensitive, in order not to be demolished by their sensitivity, needs to practice these exercises that I talk about in the book. You know, and they involve getting very clear on limits and boundaries, you know, in terms of saying no to people, in terms of keeping your physical distance. Sometimes, you know, in airports, if someone's sitting next to me or I feel like I'm being drained by their energy, I'll just move. You know, I'll just move away from people so I don't sit too close to energy fields that are uncomfortable for me.
Well, my mother's in a hospital right now, and it is really physically draining me.
Yes, it is. So you have to take time to replenish yourself, and even in the hospital to meditate, because meditation, even just for a few moments, can help you to center yourself so you don't absorb and to stay very positive and clear when you go visit your mother.
Well, thank you for reminding me of that.
Yes, well, it'll help.
Now, Judith, let me ask you, when you were writing your book, was there a real exciting part in the book or a book that surprised you that you didn't anticipate when you began the book?
Was there something about the book that surprised me?
Yeah, yeah. Something that, you know, when you were writing the book that surprised you, or something that, you know, turned out better than you thought it would, or was there something that...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it took me a while to find the right voice for this book, because when I first wrote the book proposal for this book, I wrote it in a very clinical voice, you know, from this trying to be, quote, a professional. And it didn't work out at all, because that wasn't my voice. And so I had to find what my own voice was in order to write about intuition. And I became very clear that the way to connect with my readers would be through the humanity of my experiences with intuition as a human being, and the struggles and the triumphs. And so I guess the great success that I think I had with the book is that I was able to really tap a deep emotional and spiritual core in myself through the energy of the writing. And that's what people thank me for, is that, you know, it frees them up. And it was through my own experiences, not just in the telling of them, but the energy with which I write about it, and the emotional commonalities that we all have that are able to really penetrate areas of resistance or free up areas that have been bound in people. And I get, you know, tremendous number of emails from people thanking me because they're alone with their intuitive experiences. They're, you know, in a housewife in the Midwest, and she can't tell her husband or family about her intuitions, or somebody in therapy is afraid to tell their therapist because they're afraid of being called crazy. You know, what Second Sight will do will free up everyone is having all those experiences of, you know, trying to repress your intuition for whatever reason, and how not to. I think that was the great success. I mean, for me, this book is beloved to me. I mean, it's my heart and soul that I've written with, and all my knowledge as a psychiatrist and as a lover of intuition and a student of intuition, is, you know, having developed it along the way and continue each day to deepen it more. It's something very, very important to me. Intuition is the way I try and lead my life.
Well, it sounds like a workshop actually came out of you writing this book, because you're going to Ireland to teach Second Sight. So,
I think more than one workshop. I've been teaching for quite a number of years. I travel around and I teach and I give workshops. And in fact, I'm giving a wonderful workshop at Esalen Institute the weekend of Halloween, you know, which is in Big Sur. And it's on developing intuition, awakening intuition, and that's on my website, which is drjudithorloff.com. And I'll also be up at the New Living Expo May 1st giving a talk on Second Sight, which is in San Francisco. And that information is on my website also. So, yes, workshops have sprung out of this book.
So what day are you speaking at the expo in San Francisco?
I'll be there on May 1st, 1 to 2:30, giving a talk on the power of intuition and Second Sight. And the information is on drjudithorloff.com. And it's all the location, everything. It's in central San Francisco.
Okay, and that's Dr. Judith Orloff, and it's ORLOFF.com. Yeah, that's really wonderful. So when the techniques, are there some techniques that you can share with our listeners and kind of let people have a little insight into what's going on within themselves?
Well, one of the techniques I talk about in Second Sight is learning how to remember and interpret your dreams, because dreams are a very potent intuitive state. And so learning how to tap that information can give you answers on how to lead your life. And the way to remember dreams is to keep a dream journal by your bed and keep a pen by the dream journal. Then before you go to sleep, ask a question, whatever it is. It can be, how can I help my mother in the hospital? How can I keep my energy high? How can I develop a better relationship with my boss? Whatever it is, just ask one question before you go to sleep at night. Then in the morning, stay in bed for 5 minutes in the hypnagogic state between sleep and waking, and just remember the dream, then write it down without analyzing it. Then see how the answer in the dream refers to the question. And you can do this every night for a week as a technique to awaken your intuition in dreams, so you can get used to going to your dreams for answers.
Well, actually, I had a dream, and now I look back at my dream just the day before my mother went into the hospital, and the dream was actually, giving me the clue that that's what was going to happen.
Yes, exactly. There are predictive dreams. That's one type of dream, along with psychological guidance and healing dreams. And so sometimes we know beforehand what's going to be happening, and the dreams give us clues.
Yes, I look back at it, it was just remarkable. Because when I had the dream, usually, like you said, I usually try to analyze it, and I was thinking it was something about me, but come to find out it wasn't.
Yes, yes. Sometimes you find out if intuitions are accurate just by life unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can see exactly what happened in life and see if it correlates to the dream.
So I kind of wonder, Paula, if you thought maybe it was you, maybe you were fearful to look at it being someone else outside of you.
Go ahead.
What is that? Was that a question?
She was asking.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering, with her dream, she thought it was her in her dream instead of turned out to be her mom. And so I was wondering if, you know, we have a fear of seeing those that we love around us, you know, being harmed in some way. And so she transposed it from her mom and to it being her.
Yes, yes, that could be. And also another possibility is that there's an enmeshment between you and your mother. There hasn't quite been a separation yet. And there's a confusion between who's who.
Well, that could be. But you know, in my dream, I had two daughters. And so that was probably me, that
yes.
part of it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. But when a psychologist or a psychiatrist is talking to someone, how would they know the difference between intuition and psychosis?
Well, intuition comes through either very neutrally, just simply as information, or it comes through with a sense of compassion. Psychosis comes through with... It has voices such as hurt yourself, hurt somebody else, the FBI is out to get me, my food is poisoned, and it says very negative things about people, you know, very derogatory things. Intuition never says that. So there's a huge difference between intuition and psychosis. But sometimes there's an overlap. Sometimes people are having psychotic experiences who also have some element of intuition, because they claim to predict the future, they claim to know certain things, and at times they do. I mean, it's accurate, but the way I would work with any of those people is to help ground and center them and treat their psychosis first and then deal with the intuitive elements. But basically there's a big difference between intuition and psychosis. And you know, the main way to tell an accurate intuition is that it's either neutral or it's compassionate, and you can use those two signs as a way to and of gauge whether your intuitions are accurate or not.
I was just thinking the other day, you know, sometimes when family members come through from the other side, and it's really interesting because out of the clear blue sky, or it doesn't have to be from the other side, it could be a person long distance, you know, from you, and you're paying attention to whatever you're doing, whether you're working or whatever, and out of the clear blue sky, their name pops into your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, is that a trigger form of an intuition coming that there's a connection in the brains between the two people in some way?
Oh, yes. I mean, sometimes you'll be thinking about somebody and then suddenly they call. You know, that's mm-hmm. a form of intuition where you just
yeah.
suddenly get on their wavelength. And you get it, and you're open. But the thing is, with intuition, you have to be really aware and open. So you don't. It can come in very quickly, so you can tend to forget it, you know, quickly. But I encourage everyone to pay attention to these synchronicities of intuition. And if you know you get an intuition, follow through on it. See what happens. A lot of people talk themselves out of intuition. You see,
mm-hmm.
so
yeah,
that's the mind, the linear mind that will always do that. But instead of doing that, you know, what I suggest is follow through, you know, tap that play, have fun with it, experiment, risk, see what's there.
Yeah, I'm prone sometimes to talk myself out of listening to my own intuition.
Yes, well, a lot of people are. It's just human. But what I'm suggesting is when you catch yourself doing that, be very compassionate and loving, but then follow through on the intuition. Don't talk yourself out of it.
Write it down so you can remember it, too.
Yes, write it down. Write it in your dream journal.
Well, yes. That's part of being grounded, isn't it?
Yes.
Remember?
Yes, remember, but also having the courage to act. Very important to have the courage to act.
Well, like Taz was saying, that sometimes people don't remember what they, you know, it comes in and leaves so fast you don't remember it. But I think if you're grounded, you're more inclined to remember it. Isn't that true?
Yes, absolutely. If you're grounded, if you're centered, if your feet are on the ground, then yes, you're more likely to remember it.
So do you teach grounding techniques other than meditating?
Yes, there's an article on my website, drjudithorloff.com, about how to stay centered, grounded, and protected. So there are many things you can do. And one technique is going out into nature. Nature is very grounding, the earth energies, being able to sit near trees, be out in the hills, you know, be around lakes, whatever you can do to be in nature, that will help to ground you. Very important. And also breathing exercises, bringing yourself back in the body rather than floating around, to breathe yourself back into the body and really pay attention to the intuitions in the body and being grounded rather than being in your head or, you know, not being in the body. A lot of people float, you know, a few inches from the body and aren't really connected to it.
Going back to a point that we talked about earlier in the interview, you actually taught at a medical school. Did you get any you taught intuition. Did you get any backlash from that, or was it all positive feedback after you taught that class?
Well, it depends where I teach it. I teach it at the Mindfulness Research Center at UCLA, and so they're very open to meditation and mindfulness and intuition. So when I teach it in that area of UCLA, there's a tremendous openness to it. Sometimes the Department of Psychiatry sends me residents to supervise who are looking for this. So then there's more than an openness. I mean, there's a hunger to learn, you see. So, you know, that's my capacity in teaching over there in those two avenues.
Well, that's good that they send people to you, because a few years back they may not have done that.
Yes, well, we've progressed, you know, quite a bit in medicine in that there's much more openness to meditation, intuition, yoga, energy therapies. All of that is really opening up. You know, it has opened up in the last few years, which is fantastic.
Now, let me go back to your book and look at it. Can you tell us some of the other areas that you placed in your book that was really exciting? Maybe you didn't anticipate writing about them, but then you put it in there. And the sequences for helping people.
Yes. Well, the chapter on intuitive experiences in everyday life, you know, is extremely exciting to me. And it's about learning how to recognize synchronicities, deja vus, clairvoyance, intuitive empathy, you know, how to recognize all these things in everyday life. And synchronicities are those perfect moments of harmony where, you know, let's say you're thinking about a job, you need to get a job, and suddenly you sit next to a person on a plane who tells you about the perfect job, or, you know, you're walking in some strange place, you look down at the newspaper and you see the answer to a question that you had, you know, that kind of thing. So it talks about awakening synchronicities in everyday life and paying attention to those. You know, as well as deja vus, which are deja vus are the feeling where when you meet somebody that you already know them, that they're very familiar. They're not just new people that you're meeting. And, you know, just you walk into an apartment or you walk into a place and so you felt like you've been there before. Those kinds of things are intuitive experiences.
And the key to all of this is to actually recognize it, because probably we're all sent messages, but we just don't recognize it sometimes.
Yes, yes, because the mind is going so fast and we have our whole list of to-dos that we're, you know, always thinking about, and that gets in the way of intuition. You see, so what I'm suggesting in Second Sight is that people leave some time for this, because this brings magic into your life.
You know, it is magic. Yes, it is magic. And it
makes
you have to live.
It's a wonderful way to live. Intuition in the moment, you know, and insist that you be in the moment to experience life. You see, that's what's intuition is. You can't be in the future and you can't be in the past when you're tuning into intuition. You have to be in the very present moment and being aware of any signals your body is sending, any flashes of insight, any gut feelings, any knowings, any senses of energy. You know, all of these are ways I talk about in the book that intuition comes through. And some people are visual and some people are auditory. Sometimes, you know, people who are very visual get flashes, get imagery, or get dreams, whereas others are auditory and they might hear the message through, you know, their auditory apparatus inwardly in their own head. So it can be a variety of things. And also what you had mentioned before is that intuition can help you to communicate with loved ones who have passed on. And that's,
yeah, I've had that experience. It's been pretty awesome.
What was your experience?
Oh, what was my experience? My dad, which was on the other side, he came 2 weeks in advance before my mother was dying, and he told me, and that was excellent. And he actually told me that I needed to write her a letter, so I got up and I started typing what he was talking about so I wouldn't forget any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when after I went to see my mom and I was with her, and I asked her, I said, if you get a chance, would you please, you know, come in and let me know, because I was unable to be next to her when she passed on. And I was really shocked when my dad came in, let alone, you know, I just wanted to make a connection with her if I could. Mm-hmm. And so I said that to her, and it was really strange because I was in my relaxer chair at home, and all of a sudden I got a flash, and it was almost like I was in an elevator that went up, and when the doors opened, I saw my aunt, which was really my mom's half-sister, but she raised her, so she was like my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And she was jumping up and down in the hallway on a big bed, and she said, Mama's here, Mama's here, you know.
Oh.
My next thoughts were, you know, can I see Mama? And she said, Mama was really ill, so she's, you know, having to go in a certain area right now, but we're so excited, and she's just going to be in good hands. And it was just really, I'm going, wow. These are things that you never anticipate. When you see the flashes, you expect to see your mom.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it makes it comforts you to know.
Yeah, it made it more real. I'm going, okay, you know, I couldn't even think of this. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not like part of a brain that was thinking in a sequence. So it was very, I realized from that point on that these flashes and things that I was getting, that I realized what they were. And they always do that from the other side for me. They give me something that's completely out of context from what I would anticipate receiving. And my answer is always answered, but it's also answered in a different way than I ever anticipated. So it was pretty wonderful.
Yes, yes. But the experience, how did you know it was true and real?
I called my brother, who knew my mom had passed on and everything. Yeah. So I knew when the timing happened and everything. So I made the connections, and it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun making that connection in your life when, you know, the intuition's there and you can believe it and you understand what it is, and you can go forth on it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, but when you were having the experience itself, you know, this is what people usually ask me is, you know, how do you know when you're having it, if it's real or it's just wish fulfillment? Was there something that stood out for you?
Oh, you know, I actually, at the time, I had been reading. I had been reading a lot of spiritual books and things like that. And, you know, this just came into a flash. This was like, I have like a third eye that opens up like a TV. And it flashes, and it gives me the flash. And the flash was as I was in an elevator, and the doors opened and parted, and then I saw this, and I saw my aunt. So I, you know, which, like I say, was my grandmother. But so anyhow, it, you know, I just knew. And then you saw the wide corridors of hospital, and it was, you know, it just was that way. I mean, I just realized what was happening. And I could telepathically, I was receiving the message from my aunt and just, you know, watching her jumping down on the bed, and I laughed because she has such a witty sense of humor. She was always funny. This woman loved to cook, and she just, she had that twinkle in her eye that, you know. So for her to show up, it was like, okay, we're taking care of Mama, and we're so happy she's here, you know. So
now, Judith, have you heard from, you know, some of your patients of physical things being sent to them from someone that's on the other side?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, I'll give you an example. It's a friend of Taz, and Taz and I knew this lady that passed on, and I had a store, and I hadn't seen her for a couple of months, and I didn't realize that she was that ill. So somebody came in the door and said, oh, somebody dropped their business card, and it was this lady's business card. And 20 minutes later, I got a phone call that she had passed away.
Mm.
So it was like a physical.
Yes, it can happen like that. Yes, that's a very good point. You can get physical guideposts to, mm-hmm. you know, point you in the right direction. Yes, that, yeah, but that, the point you make is so good because it means be aware, you know, of the little clues that come to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being intuitively open and aware to look for these kinds of things. Most people are so busy in a rush, they don't even consider them. But if you're open and you keep an intuitive eye out for these synchronicities, then they can guide you in the right direction. You get signs in life. I talk about in Second Sight the signs that you can get. And if you're intuitively open, you can really see the signs and follow them. And following intuitive signs and then watching where they lead to the amazing places they lead is quite an exercise, you know. It's quite an empowering exercise.
Even music playing on the radio will give you messages.
Yes, it will. Music playing on the radio. Let's say you've been thinking of an old boyfriend and suddenly your song comes on the radio. Something like that, the song that was your song.
Yeah.
And, you know, suddenly it comes on the radio, and then you hear it, and then he calls. You know, something like that. Yeah, that's, it's the universe talking to you.
You know, the universe talks in pretty incredible ways. In fact, there was a time, it was around the time that some of these things happened with me also. I was reading a lot of books. Actually, I had had an accident, so I wasn't working, and I was doing a lot of reading in the evening time. And I'm a person that has to say, okay, you know what? I read a sentence and I go, okay, how does one prove this? Or, you know, or I don't quite believe this. I'm kind of like a skeptic. And my guides began giving me, telling me to go to my bookshelf and telling me, like, what book to get, what page, what paragraph, and my answer would be answered. And when it started happening that way, I really began... And I was laughing. I couldn't believe that actually that could happen. I mean, knowing of all the library of books I have, and then they would point me to the book and the page and the paragraph, and it was like my answer was answered. And that was, like I said, it was almost a giddy feeling going, I can hardly believe this is happening. So when, I, you know, again, if you just pay attention and kind of follow, and think maybe your guides on the other side really do assist you with things every day if you just kind of would be aware of it, maybe.
Yes, that's the message of Second Sight. I mean, there are angels all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That if you listen to, sometimes it's not just guides on the other side or elsewhere. It's hearing human beings talking and saying certain things that can guide you. That's being open to intuitive
right.
experiences in everyday life. I mean, sometimes spirit speaks through strangers, people you don't even know, and suddenly they're talking about something you need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
But the excitement of Second Sight and intuition is being open to all those things, you know, being playful and not just explaining them away, but taking advantage of knowledge from every area that can come to you, you know, really every area, and just keeping your ears and eyes open for illumination each day. It's a fun and empowering way to live.
So do you actually give situations in the book, maybe how to breathe or maybe how to meditate, or does the book have any part like that so people can maybe take a few minutes out before they...
Oh, yes, definitely. Meditation is my primary spiritual practice. And so I talk about the spiritual path of the intuitive and what one has to do, really, to prime oneself spiritually to open up to intuitive information. And part of that is meditation. And I talk about how to set up an altar or a sacred space in one's home so that you can meditate there and really use that space as a place to tune into spirit and to tune into intuition on an ongoing basis. And I recommend daily practice on how to meditate in following the breath to turn off the mind. That's one of the techniques I talk about, because the breath, when you focus on it, it changes channels from the busyness of the mind and takes you into a more spacious place. And all you need to do is just focus on the breath. And when thoughts come, all the to-do thoughts and all the worries and the concerns and all that, to be able to just focus on the inhalation, the exhalation, the inhalation, the exhalation, and it just shifts you into another level of awareness. And so focusing on the breath helps you shift rather than turning off the mind. You can't really turn off the mind. It just gets louder when you try and do that. It gets angry at you when you try and turn it off. It doesn't like that. But what you can do is shift channels using the breath. And so the mind is still going. You're just not aware of it. You're just shifting your levels of awareness in meditation so that you're still. You know, it's really fascinating the way the mind works. So you don't want to try and shut it off, but you do want to shift out of it. And the breath can help you do that. And once you've shifted out of it, then you're in the intuitive place where you can receive messages.
And does if you do this in the same place, the same location, your special sacred space every day, does the energy just grow and grow and it gets easier?
Oh, yes. You build a vortex of energy. Every time you meditate in the same place, you build that vortex because it's sacred energy. And so when you sit down the next time, there's energy built there. It's really fabulous. You know, if you like that feeling of powerful energy, then you could build it up around your altar, a sacred space, but don't have other people visit there. Just have it be for you alone. That's it. It's not a socializing place. It's not a place to talk. It's just a place for you to sit and commune with spirit. No, my spiritual practice, and I talk about my spiritual teacher in Second Sight, is he's Taoist. And so my main practice is Taoism. And although I meet with my spiritual teacher a few times a year, he lives in Thailand, and he comes to the U.S., most of my spiritual practice is solitary, just me and my altar, you see. But it's not really solitary because it's, you know, connecting to spirit and you connect, you know, the deepest connections of all. But in terms of other people aren't there with me. It's just me and my connection to intuition and spirit that I develop by sitting in front of my altar. Altars are very sacred. I got an email recently of somebody who just read Second Sight, and she said, I didn't think I even needed an altar, but I set it up, and now I feel such peace, and I can't wait to go there. You see, people don't think about it a lot of times that they might need something like this. But, you know, a lot of people do need it, and they don't realize they need it. But once it's set up, you can feel the power of it. You see, you don't learn, most people don't learn growing up or in school that it's a good thing to set up a sacred space or an altar in your home so you could meditate. Although I think it should be part of every curriculum in every elementary school.
that would help children learn.
Yeah, it just gets them in the habit. You know, but now adults, I mean, an altar for many adults is a revelation. You know, that why would this be something I need? Is it just a hassle? Is it just another thing I have to do in my life? You know, or is it really something that's, you know, where I'm going to build a vortex of energy, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to develop the spiritual connection there, and I'm going to love going there, and it's going to be calling out to me from time to time. And you develop a relationship with your altar. It's a very sacred space. And on my altar, I just have candles and incense and a bowl of fruit, and I have the Kuan Yin, who's the goddess of compassion. A simple altar, and I sit there, and I pray, and I meditate, and I connect to spirit day after day, year after year, and it's pretty special.
You know, if somebody has little space, I mean, just a small amount of space in their home or their apartment, can it just be a corner?
Oh, yeah, just put it on the eastern wall, though. That's usually the best wall if possible.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, they're facing, so you're facing east, and it's on the eastern wall. That's usually the best place. It can be just a little tiny table, but even if you have a one-room apartment, still don't have people go over to that corner. You know, keep it private. Just don't lead them over to that corner.
Oh.
You know, it's not a socializing place. It's a place to be silent.
That reminds me, I work with nature spirits,
mm-hmm.
and it was suggested that you create a private little area for them. So maybe that's
yeah,
their
if
little
you want
meditation.
To.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe that's their little meditation.
No, that altar is not for the nature spirits. It's for you.
No, but I meant in the garden.
Oh, in the garden. Oh, well,
yeah.
They know what to do in the garden. They don't need any help.
No, but it was this one lady that works with spirits. She always does a private little thing that no one can go near. And it's just private, just so the nature spirits have their...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
A little area without anybody disturbing it.
Oh, well, that's nice if no one disturbs them, yeah.
So that reminds me of, you know, us as human beings, we need our little private space.
We do. We need our altars. I mean, I am a spontaneous altar builder. I build them all over the place, wherever I go. Like if I collect little rocks, I put it in my pocket, and then I put them on the floor in a hotel room or something. Build these little altars, you know, wherever I go, because I like them. You know, you
so
can build little sacred rock formations everywhere if you put stuff in your pocket.
So do you create an altar whenever you teach a workshop?
I always prepare my sacred space around where I speak. You know, I do a feng shui with it. I do flowers and a table and hopefully a candle or, you know, at least a flower for me to see, you know, to have some sort of flower to in my visual field. And I meditate to create that sacred space. But sometimes I teach in large hotels, you know, the conference hotels, which have pretty bleak energy.
Right.
So I just have to create that sacred space on stage with me. And sometimes, though, like I'm giving a workshop at Esalen Institute in Big Sur over Halloween weekend this year on intuition, and I invite people to come up and make their own altars. So on stage, people are bringing up all kinds of things that they collect and all the formations that they're making, and it's just a beautiful expanding altar throughout the whole weekend.
As they take a walk, they find something, they can just bring it up to the altar. That's really a nice idea.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really, truly beautiful.
And that's such a beautiful place to take a workshop.
Oh, wait, have you taken workshops at Esalen?
Yeah,
I love it there.
Oh, come to this one. That would be great.
Yeah. And so you're going to be speaking at the Whole Life Expo May 1st. So we
New Living Expo.
New Living Expo. So
that's what it's called in San Francisco.
Right.
On May 1st, yes, 1 to 2:30, New Living Expo, and the information is on my website, which is drjudithorloff.com. And it'll be a great afternoon. And if you want to develop intuition and second sight and just spend some time with that, you know, give it some time and some excitement, and then go back in your life replenished.
Now, can people buy the book from your website? I know they can go to Amazon, but I mean, do you?
Yes, the book is on my website. And if you get it on my website, you get 100 free gifts with it from people like Reverend Michael Beckwith, Shirley MacLean, Deepak Chopra, and all kinds of people are giving free gifts. And plus, you know, I have an emotional, combating emotional vampire online course, you know, for people who need instruction on how to deal with draining people, emotional vampires, and I'm giving away a free lesson from that course, you know, as part of the gift package that goes with the book. But the course is also available. The course is very reasonable. It's like $25 for something like 14 lessons. So it's an online course that you'll get delivered one a week. So the Emotional Vampire course is on my website, too, which is the drjudithorloff.com.
Now, is that course for people who are the vampire or for people that are around vampires?
Either. It's just for people who want to develop, you know, how to deal with draining people, or if you are draining, how not to be one. And there's a quiz that I have in the course, and what if you are an emotional vampire, then what do you do? Great question, because we all can be at times.
Yeah. I feel, sometimes I feel guilty if I feel like that's how I'm coming across, and then I'll sit back and, like, close up.
Well, yeah, or you can just be very compassionate with yourself and say, all right, how can I change my behavior to not be draining anymore? You know, how can I maybe stop complaining so much, you know, or stop being negative or stop being a victim? Whatever you're doing, there are different types of emotional vampires I talk about in the course. But you just have to be compassionate with yourself. Everyone can turn into an emotional vampire, but the great thing is learning how to catch it quickly and shift the behavior.
So actually maybe meditating and being in connection with what the main problem is in your life, does that shift that emotional vampire aspect?
Yes, meditating and shifting your own energy will shift who you attract to you, definitely.
No,
meditating also makes you be very strong, so the energy of an emotional vampire can't get to you.
Or you could recognize it right away.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key.
It's like, oh, my God. I need to turn my head.
Right.
Now, I'm going to say something negative here. In these times, I mean, in like the last year, have you seen I think more people are working on themselves, but a lot of stuff is coming out from nowhere, and it's just hitting people broadside. Have you seen a lot of that?
Well, you know, there's been an incredible amount of stress in the world, so people who are developing their intuition, you know, and who are what I call intuitive empaths, something that I talk about in Second Sight, is that they're getting demolished by all this negative energy. And they're getting exhausted and sick and tired and irritated and depressed and anxious and all of that because they're opening up to it and they don't know how to establish limits and boundaries and deal with the energy so it doesn't come in their body. You see, so there's a book that I wrote about that called Emotional Freedom, which talks about techniques on how not to take on the angst of the world if you're an intuitive empath. So that would be the book for if somebody's dealing with that specifically, though I do deal with that somewhat in Second Sight in the section on intuitive empathy. So, you know, get both and read both, and that will give you the tools that you need not to absorb. We don't want to absorb the stress of others. We want to be open and intuitive and pick up energy, but not keep it in our body. That's the last thing we want to do.
Now, how many books have you written, Judith?
I have written four books.
Four books. And they're all on your website.
Yes, and there's also a CD, Awakening Second Sight, which is not an abridged version of the book. It's a lecture tape on techniques to awaken second sight put out by Sounds True. And that's also on Amazon and on my website. It's like the companion CD to the book, Second Sight. It's called Awakening Second Sight. but it's not the book. It's a lecture.
That's great.
So would you recommend people to get the CD also when they order the book?
Yes, I think both would be work very, very well together. Some people prefer CDs, so they could just get the CD, and then some people prefer books, but they work very well together, the Awakening Second Sight CD and the book Second Sight. And it's a paperback, so it's affordable. It's like $10 on Amazon.
And if they get a CD, they can listen to it in the car.
Yes, they can.
Yes.
That's always fun. Now, is there anything that we have missed asking you that you wanted to share?
Just that if people aren't used to developing their intuition, just know that they could start right now, that this isn't something that they would have had to have done before. Everybody can develop intuition, and you could start this very moment and start from the very beginning, and that's always the best place to start, you know, and begin to awaken intuition now. And don't worry, you know, if you haven't listened to it before. It doesn't really matter. You can start today, and it can really change your life.
Mm-hmm. And what about people that are intuitive and they know it? Will this book even help them more?
Yes, this book will help deepen your capacity to listen intuitively and expand it to other levels, which is important to keep expanding it and expanding it so that it can grow and teach you. Now, as life goes on, it's a lifelong process, intuition, but the book will help you to expand your intuition.
I got chills all over. I think it must be a great book.
Yes, I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful hour that we've had with you. It's, you know, it's pretty amazing when people sit and they write some of the wonderful parts that help them grow and develop in their life, and then it turns out to be a book that that people can peer through the veils into themselves.
Yes, piercing the veil, absolutely.
Yeah, it just, they absorb it. It's an empath thing, but it's able to connect into themselves, and they can see areas maybe that they didn't have an opportunity to do before. So
that's
it,
right.
It's really exciting.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm so glad that you had a chance. You could take a spot of time out and be with us on the program today.
Oh, I'm honored that you had me as a guest.
And we want to remind everybody that if they buy the book on Judith's website, that they get, 100 gifts? What did you say?
100 free gifts online, downloadable gifts.
Wow.
Yeah, great.
I mean, how could somebody pass that up?
Well, the website is Dr. Judith Orloff, and Dr. is D-R, and then Judith, and the last name is Orloff. It's ORLOFF.com.
And her newest book is Second Sight, and she's going to be in San Francisco May 1st at the New Living Expo.
Yes. Thank you, Judith. It's been really superb having you with us. We look forward. Maybe one of these times we can meet you personally.
That would be fantastic.
And thank you for being with us today. We enjoyed
it. You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.